So I'm just going to start by chanting the four vows of the Bodhisattva. Those of you that know it, feel welcome to join in. Just one time.
Shigu Segan Mo Om Shujo
I will talk for maybe about 20 minutes or so, and then you folks can ask questions, make comments about what I've said, or about any other aspect of Zen if you want. If there's anything that you want to bring up, then please do. So what I want to speak about is what is at the heart of the Zen tradition. In fact, even officially, because I was ordained, I think it must have been 1993, by Jean Babi, whose name we chanted at the, or I chanted at the end of the list of gratitude, the ceremony of gratitude to those who transmitted the teachings. He was my second teacher. My first teacher was a woman called Nancy Amphu, who was also Jean and Nancy married while they were in Bristol. And they set up the Bristol Zen Dojo together after Deshimaru's death. They came over to Bristol after his death and set it up, and it was thanks to them that Ezork was founded across the UK, and they helped set up groups in Manchester and Oxford and London and Norwich, and I've forgotten what other ones were during their lifetime, but there was a few groups that formed during their lifetime that they helped catalyse by supporting local people who wanted to do it, or by people moving from Bristol over to set something up. So anyhow, I was ordained by Jean, but at that time the teachers in our school were not recognised by Japan. So at that time they weren't formally recognised by Japan and more recently they have chosen to become recognised by Japan by doing what was necessary and by building links with the Zen school in Japan, and so many teachers in our school are now recognised by Japan. My first teachers, who I still consider my primary teachers, Jean and Nancy, died. Nancy of cancer in the 90s, and Jean more recently, he lived to a good old age of 90, but he retired. Went back to France in 1997 after he broke his back, and lived in Strasbourg for the end of his life. And so I have a strong connection with Guy Mercier, who many of you have met, who ordained Jane Heather, I believe. Am I right? Yep, I am right. Yeah. And so in conversations with him, we decided that he would ordain me once again, but with the same names I was given by Jean and Nancy. So it wasn't a it was a kind of confirmation of what had already been done in the 90s. But it will be recognised by Japan. That happened quite recently. That happened just before Christmas in Bristol. So that's what we did. And I am ambivalent about the relationship with Japan, I'll be completely honest about. It's a more traditional organisation. It can be quite conservative in some ways. As with any organised religion, there's always a certain amount of conservatism, which can cause problems. But on the other hand, they also carry some very positive things, and some of the best people. Oh yeah, the other thing I would say about any organised religion is you get people who are in it as a career. If you see what I mean, as opposed to as a calling. And so there are people in the Japanese schools which are in it for that reason. just because that's what their parents, their father did, and therefore it's their job to carry on doing it. And so those things are there, but also there are some people who are very committed, and people who carry wisdom, people like Shundo Aoyama, a great nun who has published a book called Zen Seeds in English, and her teachings are without doubt, you know, full of depth. And so we can't say that Japan doesn't have it. It's just like any organisation. There's some people who really carry something profound and other people who are along for the ride. That's just how it is. So I kind of overcame my reservations and said yes, since that's something that we are doing as a community, I would do that also. But what I did was I was reading some stuff about on their website about what do they say. They have a constitution and, if you like, a doctrine. What are you supposed to believe if you are a Zen monk? Because that, in some ways, that sort of, one could think about what one has to believe if one is a Zen monk, being almost against Zen in some ways. So I was interested to see what they said, and I found it was all right, so that was okay. And specifically, they said two things, and that's what I wanted to speak with you about today. And I'll give you the Japanese phrases, but that's not what's most important. They said, realize shikantaza and sokushin zebutsu is what they said. That's the if you like, the essence of the Soto Zen doctrine. Realize shikantaza and sokushin zebutsu. And I'm going to talk about those phrases in more detail in a moment. Shikantaza means simply sitting, just sitting. And sokushin zebutsu means the mind itself is Buddha. So that is the core of Zen teaching officially, is just sitting, and the mind itself is Buddha. And also, it's interesting, it doesn't say believe, it says realize. And which I found interesting. And the word realize, they use it, so what realize here means, it doesn't mean to understand. It doesn't mean like, oh, I realize that we need to decide what restaurant we're going to later on, and therefore we need to sort it out. It means make real. It means to make something real, to manifest itself, make something manifest. So the, if you like, job of a Zen nun or monk is to manifest, make real in the world, just sitting, and mind itself is Buddha. That is the official Soto doctrine. That's what we as Zen nuns or monks are asked to do if we choose to be ordained. And so I wanted to talk about that. So if you could say that there's any belief in Zen, in the same way I think more broadly in, if you go back to the Buddha originally, if there's any belief in the Buddha's teachings, it's a belief in a practice. It's not a belief in something, it's a belief in a practice and the value of that practice. That's really what belief and faith are in the Zen tradition, and going back to the time of Buddha. To have faith in the practice, and that if we stay with the practice and repeat it, then that practice will carry us in life appropriately. That's what this is about. So, shikantaza and sokushin zebutsu. So I wanted to talk first of all about sokushin zebutsu. Sokushin zebutsu, as in mind itself is Buddha. This is, if you like, almost the philosophy of Zen. And this goes right back to Bodhidharma, the founder of Zen, who brought Zen teachings from the mythical founder, I would say. We don't know very much about him from a historical point of view, the mythical founder, who brought Zen teachings from somewhere south of India, maybe Sri Lanka, to China. And what he said was, his classic quote, according to the story, he said to the emperor, that everything is special, nothing is sacred. So everything is special, nothing is sacred. And what that is, nothing is sacred. So another way of saying that is, everything is sacred. So whether nothing is sacred or everything is sacred are in some ways the same. What everything is special and nothing is sacred is saying is that there's no one thing or no set of things that in some way are more profound than others. So that statue of the Buddha is no more or less sacred than the flower next to it or than the toilet system. Yeah. So all these things are manifestations of reality, manifestations of a call to presence, a call to awareness as we go about our lives. And so this is what, so that's what Bodhidharma said. Everything is special, nothing is sacred. Which means that we can live vividly with life as it is. We don't need to go looking for something that is sacred or different, that's away from where we are right now. And so mind itself is Buddha is exactly that, in that we find Buddha in mind. Mind is Buddha. It's not we find, I said we find, so Buddha manifests, Buddha nature manifests through mind. The way that when mind is present, Buddha nature is made real. Buddha nature is always already in us, in our mind, but it's sometimes clouded a bit by the buzzing of thoughts which bring us to, which make us less aware of what's going on around us. But nonetheless, that awareness is always already present within us. And so mind itself is Buddha. And the art of Zen is to realise, make real, manifest mind as Buddha in the world. That is what the art of Zen is. And that is what we're called to do as practitioners. And so the way we manifest it, the way we realise it, is rooted in shikantaza, simply sitting. The way that we manifest mind itself as Buddha is rooted in the practice of what you have just done. So when you sit there, you are always already Buddha. And you make real your Buddha nature simply through sitting. And I remember Nancy Amphu, the very first session I went on, we were all sitting facing the wall, and we turned to face inwards, and she said, "Good morning, Buddhas." And I thought, oh, that was nice. Yeah. And so we do, effectively, we make real our Buddha nature. We make real, our Buddha nature is always already real, but we manifest it in the world through practice, in particular through shikantaza, simply sitting. And what does simply sitting mean? So to Dogen, who was the person responsible for bringing Soto Zen from China to Japan, simply sitting is really that nothing else is necessary. Sitting practice is all that is necessary. All other practices are secondary and grow out of the root that is simply sitting. So that's what it is. And so it means that if you are practicing Zen, particularly in our school, then if you practice simply sitting, that is enough. Nothing more is necessary. These ceremonies are not fundamentally necessary. In fact, there are temples in Japan where they do no ceremonies. But you won't find a temple in Japan where they never do Zazen. So the core of our school is the practice of Zazen, and all other practices need to flower from that, effectively. They need to be manifestations of the essential that comes from Zazen, and I'll talk more about that a bit later on. So nothing else is necessary besides Zazen. When I say all other practices, the whole of life is a practice, and so all of life, the call to awareness, the being present, can emerge from having the seated practice as the root of one's life, the root practice of one's life. And from that root practice of sitting, all of life can be practice. So nothing else is necessary, that's the first thing to say. Doesn't mean nothing else happens, it just means Zazen is all that is necessary from the point of view of the Soto school. And the second thing, that just sitting has a rhythm. And for Zazen to be a natural manifestation, making real, then it needs to become natural for us. And for it to become natural for us, it needs to become part of our routine of life. And to make it part of our routine of life means if it's natural, it is effortless in a certain sense. It's just a natural part of who we are. In the same way that cleaning teeth becomes almost automatic. It's something that you notice when you don't do it rather than you notice when you do it. You see what I mean? For someone who is committed to the Zen path, Zazen becomes a natural part of one's life. And to make it a natural part of one's life requires, at least initially, the discipline of regular practice. Over time, as it becomes a natural part of one's life, that regular practice no longer feels like discipline. It just feels like how one is. But nonetheless, discipline is necessary to take that first step. So discipline, that means practicing regularly at dojo, on the group. It also might mean, depending on your personal circumstances, practicing regularly on your own, trying to make time and space for it in one's life. So I practice every day. I normally do it at the dojo. If I can't be at the dojo, then I would do it at home. I won't practice for as long as I do at the dojo, but nonetheless, I would practice at home, even if it's only for 5 minutes, just to have a taste each day, is a good thing to do. And so, so making sure that one makes this practice to realise it. To realise Shikan Zaza means to make it part of one's life in such a way that it is natural, a natural part of one's being. And as I say, that takes effort to begin with, but then it does just become part of who you are. So that's the first thing I wanted to say. So then moving on to what is just sitting. So the practice of just sitting means sitting in a clear posture. So one of the things, again, about the Japanese Zen school is that we are quite, what would the word be? Strict isn't quite the right word, but we place strong emphasis on the physical aspect of the posture, unlike some other schools. So the way that you sit is important to us. And the reason why the way that you sit is important to us is because it is our belief, and I think that there is certain evidence, modern evidence that backs that up, that the position one is in affects one's state of mind. And so by sitting in a way that is upright, then it leads to a clearer state of mind. And the two risks, if we think about the games that our ego plays two kinds of games. One kind of game is a too arched and heroic game. And the other kind of game is, I'm not very good. Those are both games that our ego plays. And so by trying to place one just physically in the upright place, then you're neither, I'm not very good, nor are you, I'm great. You just are. And so uprightness is just being, as opposed to being great or being pathetic. You see what I mean? And so that's one of the things about Kin Hin as well. Jean Babi always said that Kin Hin is a noble posture because it allows you to go beyond both arrogance and forced humility. And so he actually was particularly keen on, so I think things are slightly different now, not completely different, but he was particularly keen on women, making sure that the women were not like this, because he felt that the women in particular, simply by being more upright, would be able to step out of some of the conditioning that in some cases, not in all cases, had made them overly subservient, unnecessarily subservient in life. That was certainly something that he would say in Kin Hin, and he would be particularly keen on that, during Kin Hin being the walking meditation that we do. So Kin Hin, it's like he also used to like the phrase, which I think is from Dogen, of it's like a big cat prowling through the woods quietly. So, just moving stealthily through. So what we do when we just sit, we sit in a clear posture, we let go of thought, we let thought loosen its hold over us, which I spoke a little bit about this morning. We try to, Uchiyama uses the phrase, open the hand of thought. We try to let the thoughts go. It doesn't mean thoughts aren't there. Thoughts are always there. They are part of our individuality, and our individuality will always be with us until death. And there's nothing wrong with our individuality. It's just that it's maybe not as big a thing as we like to think it is. So what we do is we let go of not only thought, but also we let go of all that is not simply sitting. So the act of simply sitting is to let go of all that is not just sitting. So we let go of any act of judgment on ourselves, that we're doing it well, that we're doing it badly. We let go of any sense that we're trying to get anything out of it, that we're making progress. Are we getting more enlightened? Are we getting mentally healthier and mentally more stable? All these things might happen. It's just that we let go of any desire or judgment about them. It doesn't mean that... So we let go of some of these things. We let go of this moving towards something. And I think, yeah, so there's a classic. So Zazen may well be good for us. But there is the classic quote from Kodosawaki, who said that until you get it through your thick skulls that Zazen is good for nothing, it really will be good for nothing. And so it is the act of letting go of the desire to get anything from it which allows it to work its magic. And the reason, because the magic that it works is the magic of the ego loosening. And if the ego wants something, the ego cannot loosen. And so we're trying to put ourselves in a position where the ego can loosen. So we're letting go of the egoic thoughts that put basically the I at the centre of the universe. We let go and those, just to be clear, as I said before, these egoic thoughts are part of our being. We are human animals. And as animals and as humans, we live lives which require us to sometimes make judgments. We need to get food, we need to get whatever. Yeah. But nonetheless, these egoic thoughts, which are necessary to live, are also a trap, don't allow us to live vividly. And so Zazen and the Zen practice is about loosening this, not having the eye at the centre of the universe anymore. But it's more than that. It's also letting go of views. It's letting go of it's letting go of rigidly holding any belief about how things are. It's about loosening those views, loosening those conceptualizations. So the very first phrase, poem in a famous Zen text called, sorry, not Zen text, the Buddhist text called by Nagarjuna, who is also said to be the mythical author of what we chanted at the beginning of today, says, I pay homage to the Buddha who taught the abandoning of all views. So in other words, abandoning of all systems of framework where we try to impose reality on the world. And again, those views are necessary, those systems are necessary, but the act of cutting the world into pieces to make sense of it makes us step back from a vivid experience of how things are. And so part of the act of shikandaza, of the letting go, is the letting go of the need to cut the world into pieces to make sense of it. The world, and just experiencing it as it is. And if you did that when you were crossing the road, that would be a bad plan. And so Zazen is a great time to do it, because you're safe. Yeah. So letting go of these things, letting go of conceptualizations. And also, as part of that, letting go of ideas of what Zen and Buddhism are. When you are practicing, it is not necessary to have a view about what Zen and Buddhism is about. When you're practicing Zazen, you let go of all those things. Yeah. So we let go of ego, we let go of, and when we let go of ego, when we let go of all these conceptualizations, then both the personal, we are individuals, that never goes, and the universal are realized within us. So Zazen is a manifestation of the personal and the universal simultaneously. We make real the personal and the universal. And we make real, and that means we make real both practice and enlightenment simultaneously. Enlightenment is simply openness in the practice. So there's different views about what enlightenment is. I think from a Soto Zen point of view, you are all already enlightened, and you will already have had tastes of that when you sit. It's not something that's big and special that someone heroically gets. It's something that you already have, and simply sitting allows it to bubble up naturally through you. Simply sitting is a manifestation of your enlightened nature, and it allows it to bubble up naturally between your thoughts. And so what we do is we manifest the universal in the personal. And the classic metaphor for that is the moon in the dewdrop. The moon in Dogen uses the image of the drop of water which is falling from a heron's beak. Our life is like a drop of water which falls from a heron's beak, where the heron is just fed on some weed in the pond. And the drop of water falls from a heron's beak. And our life is as fleeting as that drop of water which falls back into the pond. But nonetheless, in this fleeting life that we live, the moon, which is the representation of the universal, is reflected within it perfectly. And so we are merely a drop of water. We are nothing special. But nonetheless, just that drop of water, just as each breath is in some ways nothing special, but in some ways remarkable, each breath manifests that the moon. Our life manifests the moon. Our life manifests the whole of reality, the whole of existence is reflected within us. And the only thing that prevents that is when we're too tangled up in our thoughts. It's always already happening, but if we're too tangled up in our thoughts, then it just can't flow. And so the practice is simply to allow it to flow. And then it is said that we become simply a zafu under an empty sky. We're just simply sitting there, and that's all that's necessary. So we constantly practice letting go, we constantly let go. So the only effort that is necessary in Zen is to, well, besides getting here, once you're here, the only effort is to notice when you are no longer letting go. That's the only effort that's necessary, is to notice that you're no longer letting go. And then the act of noticing allows one to once more let go. So it allows us to effectively let go, and our entire being is a manifestation of the ground of reality as it is, without views, without conceptualizations. So the final thing I wanted to say is what happens, so that is the root, Shikantaza is the root. From that grows other practices, the ceremony, but not only the ceremony, eating. We have ritual ways of eating, but also all of life. All of life is a practice, and all of life is an opportunity to be present. And whereas in Zazen we let go of all, when we are doing something in life, we let go of all that is unnecessary, which gets in the way of us being truly present in the moment to what we're doing. And what we're doing might be chopping the vegetables. It might be taking care of someone who is suffering. It might be having an argument with someone who's just tried to overcharge us. It might be trying to sort out, organise something that we have to do for our work. It might be resolving difficulties with our partner. You know, it can be all these things. All these are practices. All of these are calls to practice. And in each case, it is the practice of Zazen is a call to let go of the desire to impose one's ego and to impose a right answer on the situation, and an opportunity to be open to the many possibilities and be present on what can happen in that. So I'll stop there. So we'll finish, again we'll chant the four vows for anyone that knows it.
Shigo. Seigan Mo'o.